Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable, your exposure ends here.
Welcome to the deep dive. You asked, and today we're diving into currency trading, Forex.
Yeah.
We've got getting started in currency trading here, the 2008 edition. The plan is, well, to unpack it for you, make sense of this, you know, huge market.
Exactly. It's a really good starting point, this book. Yeah. Whether you're coming from other markets or are totally new, we're going to try and pull out the key stuff, give you a clear picture without, you know, drowning you in detail.
Okay, so Forex, at its heart, what is it? It sounds kind of abstract.
Well, simply put, it's the market where you trade world currency, swapping one for another.
Okay.
And this book, it really zooms in on the retail spot market. That's the online bit that's blown up. Lets individuals like you jump in.
Right. So who's actually doing the trading? Is it all just like big banks and governments?
The book points to two main groups. You've got your hedgers first.
Hedgers?
Yeah, think businesses doing international trade. They need to protect themselves if exchange rates move against them, you know, managing risk on payments or costs. Then there are speculators. They're in it purely for profit, trading on the price movements.
Mm-hmm.
And that ranges from, the huge banks down to individual traders.
Gotcha. And this online retail side,
mm-hmm.
How big is it compared to, everything? Seems like you see ads for it everywhere.
It's definitely grown, no doubt. But the book reminds us it's still a pretty small slice of the whole pie.
Really?
Yeah, the vast majority of the daily volume, that's still the big institutions trading with each other. It kind of puts the scale into perspective for individual traders, you know? You're a small fish.
Okay, yeah, that's a good perspective. So why would I, as an individual, even think about trading currencies? What's the appeal?
Well, the book lays out a few things. A big one is just the constant movement, especially of the U.S. dollar against other currencies.
No.
Plus, with global trade and investment just increasing all the time, economies are linked, right? So exchange rates are always shifting. That creates volatility.
And volatility means
opportunity, potential profit opportunities, whether a currency is going up or down. You can trade based on expecting weakness, too, not just strength.
Ah, okay. So you can play both sides.
Exactly. And another point the book makes, Forex often doesn't move in lockstep with stocks or bonds. Low correlation.
I see.
Which makes it attractive for, say, fund managers looking to diversify, spread the risk a bit.
Right. Now, the main currencies.
Yeah.
The ones we always hear about.
Right.
Which ones does the book focus on?
It highlights the majors. So the U.S. dollar, obviously.
Yeah.
USD.
Yep.
Then the euro, EUR, for the eurozone, the Japanese yen, JPY, British pound, GBP, Swiss franc, CHF, Canadian dollar, and the Australian dollar, AUD.
Okay, the big players.
Those are the ones traded most actively, generally where you find the most liquidity.
And where does this trading happen? Is there like a central building, a Forex HQ somewhere?
That's a really key difference from, say, the stock market. It's mainly an interbank market. Yeah, a global network. Big banks trading directly with each other, with clients, mostly electronic or over the phone. It's called an over-the-counter market, OTC.
Like NASDAQ, kinda?
Sort of, yeah. No single physical exchange floor like the NYSE. And that decentralized nature, it makes regulation a bit more complex, doesn't it? No single watchdog.
Interesting. So it's this massive flowing network. Okay, history lesson time. How did this all start? Didn't just appear with the web, right?
Oh, definitely not. The book gives a good rundown. Exchanging foreign money, that goes way, way back. Middle Ages, tied up with international banks, bills of exchange, that kind of thing.
Wow. Yeah.
Then came the gold standard. Early 1800s to the 1930s, countries basically fixed their currency's value to gold.
I've heard of that.
The British pound was top dog for a long time, then the US dollar took over. But the whole system collapsed during the Great Depression. Caused a lot of chaos.
And that led to big changes.
Right.
Like the Federal Reserve.
Exactly. The Fed was set up in the U.S. back in 1913, even before the gold standard fully died, to try and stabilize banking, manage monetary policy. Then after World War II, they tried again with the Bretton Woods system. Pegged currencies to the U.S. dollar, which was still tied to gold, sort of a controlled system.
But that didn't last either.
Nope. Fell apart in the early 70s. Confidence issues with the dollar. Countries disagreed. It just crumbled.
So that's when we got the floating rates we have now. Market decides.
Pretty much, yeah. Since about 1973, market forces became the main driver. The book also talks about Europe's efforts, you know, the European monetary system in the late 70s.
Leading to the euro.
Exactly. That was a huge step in 2002. Became the second most traded currency, a real counterweight to the dollar. The timeline also mentions online trading starting mid-90s and then regulations like the Commodity Modernization Act in 2000.
Fascinating journey. Okay, so fast forward to today. What actually makes these currency prices wiggle up and down, the nitty-gritty drivers?
It's a constant dance, really. Economic factors, political factors. The book points to key things like interest rates set by central banks.
That's a big one, right?
Huge. Also, international trade flows, inflation levels, political stability in a country, that all plays a role.
And governments can step in too?
Sometimes, yeah. Central banks might buy or sell their own currency to try and push the value one way or the other. Intervention, they call it.
But can anyone really control the market? It's so huge.
Well, these factors, plus big orders, can definitely cause sharp moves, volatility. But you're right, the sheer size and volume, it's incredibly hard for any one entity to dictate prices for long.
Okay, so this mix of economics and politics. Now, given it's decentralized, what about regulation? For someone like me, a retail trader, sounds like the Wild West.
It was maybe a bit more like that historically. Because there's no central base, it's tricky. But as retail forex grew, the regulators definitely stepped up their game. In the U.S., the book highlights the NFA, National Futures Association, and the CFTC, Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Their advice back then, and it's still crucial, was basically only deal with brokers who are registered. Check their NFA number.
Makes sense. And were they trying to make sure brokers were solid financially?
Absolutely. Big push for minimum capital requirements. The book mentions a target of around $5 million back then.
Wow.
Yeah. The idea was that this would force some smaller, maybe less stable brokers out, leading to consolidation. Plus, rules like know thy customer, making brokers do more checks on who they were signing up.
Right. Okay. Let's talk mechanics. Trading itself. The book mentions Mayan. Can you break that down? What does it mean in practice?
Sure. Margin basically lets you control a large position with a relatively small amount of capital. Your broker gives you leverage.
Leverage. Like a loan.
Sort of, yeah. Like a down payment.
Yeah.
So with, say, 100 to 1 leverage, if you put down $1,000, you could potentially control $100,000 worth of currency.
That sounds powerful.
It is. It magnifies potential profits. But, and this is critical, the book hammers this home. It magnifies potential losses just as much. Your whole deposit can be wiped out quickly if the market moves against you. It's a real double-edged sword.
Okay, handle with care. Got it.
Yeah.
What about terms like lots and pips? Hear those a lot.
A lot is just the standard size of a trade. A standard lot is typically 100,000 units of the base currency.
That's a lot.
It is. But brokers usually offer smaller sizes, too. Mini lots, maybe 10,000 units. Even micro lots, 1,000 units, makes it more accessible.
Okay. And pips?
A pip stands for percentage in point is the smallest price move. For most pairs, it's the fourth decimal place, like 0.0001.
Tiny movements.
Yep. And the spread, that's the difference between the buying price, the ask, and the selling price, the bid. Mm-hmm. That's basically the broker's commission built into the price.
Oh, okay.
And the book warns that this spread can get wider ballooning, they call it, if the market gets really volatile or isn't very liquid, your trading cost goes up.
Right. Now, margin calls, they sound bad. What are they and how do you not get one?
Yeah, you definitely want to avoid them. A margin call happens when your account equity, the value of your account drops below the minimum level needed to keep your trades open.
Because your trades are losing money.
Exactly. Your losses eat into your deposit. Brokers watch this constantly. The book gives an example. Maybe you get a warning if you drop to 4% below the required margin, another at 3%, and then bam, positions closed automatically at 2%. Protects the broker and stops you losing more than you deposited.
Ouch. So how do you prevent that?
Well, keep a close eye on your balance, obviously. Use stop loss orders. That's crucial. They automatically close a trade if it hits a certain loss level you set. And probably the biggest thing, don't use too much leverage.
Less leverage, less risk of a margin call.
Less risk, yeah. Remember, leverage and the margin percentage required are inversely linked. Higher leverage seems tempting, means a smaller deposit needed per trade, but it ramps up the risk significantly.
Got it. The book has some calculation examples. Can you walk through a really simple one? Profit loss.
Sure. Let's say you buy a mini lot that's 10,000 euros of the EUR/USD pair. You buy it 1.2550.
Okay.
And later, the price goes up and you sell it at 1.2550. That's a move of 0.00050 or 50 pips in your favor.
Right.
To figure out the profit in US dollars, you just multiply that price change, 0.00050, by the number of units, 10,000.
$50?
Exactly. $50 profit. Because the second currency in the pair, the quote currency, is USD, the profit is directly in dollars. The book gives other examples too, like GBP/USD, or pairs that don't involve the US dollar, where you need an extra step to convert the profit back to your account currency. And it shows how to calculate, you know, how much you can trade based on your margin.
Helpful stuff. Now, for people maybe familiar with futures trading, the book mentions spot versus futures Forex.
Yeah.
What's the main difference for a retail trader?
The book says most retail traders are in the spot market. Hmm. That's trading for essentially immediate delivery, even though positions are usually rolled over.
Right.
Futures Forex trades on organized exchanges like the CME in Chicago. The book notes some potential pluses there, usually tighter regulation, and you can see trading volume and open interest data, which you often can't in spot.
That's open interest.
It's the total number of outstanding contracts. Gives you a sense of market participation. The book also mentions the U.S. dollar index that tracks the dollar against a basket of other major currencies like the euro, yen, pound, etc. Each has a specific weight.
Okay. Choosing a broker seems like a huge decision. What's the advice there?
Absolutely critical. Due diligence is key. The book really stresses testing out demo platforms first. Get a feel for their software, the tools.
Then try before you buy.
Exactly. And test their customer service. Send an email. See how fast, how helpful they are. And always, always check their regulatory status. NFA member, if you're in the U.S.
Right.
The author expected some brokers might merge or disappear because of those higher capital rules we mentioned. Competition heating up.
And different types of brokers. Market makers versus ECNs.
Yeah, it touches on that. Market makers might seem simpler for beginners. They set the bid-ask prices. ECNs, electronic communication networks, connect you more directly to the broader market, potentially tighter spreads, but maybe a bit more complex. Look for a no-dealing desk or NDD brokers is another piece of advice.
And platform features. What should you look for?
Good charting is vital. Different chart types, bar, candlestick, maybe point and figure, swing charts. Reliable order execution, obviously. Easy access to your account info. Platform stability is web-based, Java, Flash. How solid is it? Your own internet connection needs to be reliable too, of course. And check their margin requirements, typical spreads, how they handle rollovers.
It's rollover.
That's the interest paid or earned for holding a position overnight based on the interest rate difference between the two currencies.
Oh, okay. Anything else broker-wise?
Beware of re-quoting. That's when you try to trade at a price you see, but the broker fills you at a different, usually worse, price. Less common now, but something to watch for.
Okay, so you pick a broker. What's opening an account actually like?
Mostly online now, the book says. Probably need more info than you might have needed years ago. Regulations again.
Right.
Usual steps. Application. Get accepted. Fund the account. Wire transfers are often good, especially for USD. Checks take longer to clear. Then you review all the documents, the author says. Read everything carefully. Keep records of all communication.
Good advice for anything financial, really. Mm-hmm. Okay, placing trades. What are the basic order types I need to know?
The book covers the essentials. Market orders. Buy or sell right now at the best available price.
Instant execution.
Usually. Limit orders. You set a specific price or better. Buy only if it drops to your price. Sell only if it rises to your
But
price.
you control the price.
Exactly. Stop orders, often called stop loss orders.
Okay.
You set a price, and if the market hits it, your order becomes a market order to get you out, limiting losses usually. Stop limit orders are a combo hits the start price, then becomes a limit order at a specific price.
Okay, different tools for different situations.
Yep. And GTC, good till canceled. Your order stays active until you cancel it. GTD, good for the day. Expires at the end of the trading day. Key thing is understanding how each works and, crucially, tracking your open orders. Cancel the ones you don't need anymore.
Makes sense. Okay, let's shift to analysis. How do traders decide what to trade and when? The book covers fundamental and technical. Let's start with fundamental. What's that about?
Fundamental analysis looks at the big picture: economic strength, social factors, political forces, anything that affects the supply and demand for a currency. The idea is that a country's economic health drives its currency's value long term.
So, looking at the news, economic reports.
Pretty much, focusing on macroeconomic indicators, things that tell you how an economy is doing overall.
Like what specifically? What are the big ones?
The book points to several. GDP, gross domestic product, that's the main measure of economic growth.
Right.
Interest rates, huge impact. Higher rates often attract money, strengthening the currency. Inflation data, unemployment numbers, balance of trade exports versus imports. A big deficit might weaken a currency, especially if it's worse than expected.
All right.
It also mentions PPP, purchasing power parity, comparing the price of the same goods in different countries. Think The Economist's Big Mac Index. Gives a rough idea if a currency is over or undervalued.
The Big Mac Index.
Right.
Yeah.
And things like government intervention, employment cost index, retail sales. Lots of data points. Important to know when data comes out and watch for revisions to past numbers.
So fundamental is about the why, the economic reality. What about technical analysis? Sounds more chart focused.
Exactly. Technical analysis studies price history, looking at charts, patterns, trading volume, trying to predict future price moves based on past behavior. The core idea is that all the fundamental news is already baked into the price you see on the chart.
So you don't need the news, just the chart.
Well, pure technical analysts might say that. They use charts and mathematical indicators to spot trends, turning points, potential entries, and exits.
What kind of chart tools does the book mention?
Covers the basics. Bar charts showing the high, low, open, close for a period. Trend lines, drawing lines connecting lows in an uptrend or highs in a downtrend.
Neutralizing the direction.
Yep. Support and resistance levels, price zones, where buying or selling pressure tends to emerge, potentially stopping or reversing a move.
All right.
Then patterns, reversal patterns like double tops, double bottoms, head and shoulders, suggesting a trend might be ending. And continuation patterns, suggesting the trend will likely keep going. It also mentions point and figure charts. They filter out time, just focus on price changes, and swing charts connecting peaks and troughs.
And there are mathematical indicators too, right? Oscillators and things.
Yes, loads of them. The book touches on momentum indicators measuring the speed of price changes, moving averages, smoothing out price data to see the underlying trend more clearly, RSI, the relative strength index, an oscillator that tries to show if a market is overbought or oversold.
So many tools.
It is. The book also mentions some more advanced stuff like the Goodman swing count system, Dynapoli levels, but the key takeaway is often the toolbox approach.
Blue box of price.
Yeah, using a combination of different tools, maybe some technical, maybe some fundamental, not relying on just one thing, building a confluence of signals before making a decision.
Okay. Now, the book just touches on psychology and money management, but flags them as critical.
Oh, absolutely essential. The book is right to highlight them, even briefly. So many beginners focus only on finding a magic entry signal, and they totally neglect managing their emotions. Fear and greed are the big ones in trading and managing their money. Capital preservation is job one. The book mentions a very conservative Belgian dentist approach, basically ultra cautious, using stop losses, having clear take profit targets. That's money management. It's arguably more important than the entry technique itself.
That sounds like really solid advice. Finally, for listeners wanting to dig deeper, what resources does the book suggest?
It gives a good list. Definitely use those broker demo accounts we talked about. Practice, practice, practice.
Makes sense.
There are online Forex calculators mentions, forexcalci.com, awana.com. Charting software and websites like eSignal, FXTrack, Metastock, DailyFX, BarChart. News and economic calendar sites, global-view.com, econoday.com, forexeconomiccalendar.com.
Lots of online stuff.
Yeah. and other books, obviously, mentions one called Getting Started in Forex Trading Strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, forums and broker review sites like forexpeacearmy.com can be useful, though you have to take forum stuff with a grain of salt sometimes.
Right, and auctions.
Yeah, for currency options, it points towards the Philadelphia Exchange website and specific primers on options trading.
Wow, okay. That was definitely a deep dive
right.
based on getting started in currency trading. We've really covered a lot of ground, what Forex is, the history, what moves prices, regulation, how you actually trade, the analysis tools.
Yeah, and if we boil it down for you, the listener, what are the absolute key takeaways?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Forex is this huge global market driven by complex economics and politics.
Right.
It offers opportunities, sure, but leverage means risk management isn't just important, it's absolutely vital. Understanding some basic fundamental and technical analysis helps you read the market.
Mm.
But honestly, mastering your own head, your psychology, and sticking to disciplined money management, that's probably the biggest factor for long-term success.
So if someone's listening and thinking, okay, I want to learn more, what's the first step? Actionable advice.
The book's advice still holds up. Get a demo account. Play around. See how it feels without risking real cash. Research brokers really thoroughly. Check their regulation, test their support, and just keep learning. Use those resources we mentioned, but really, really get a grip on the basics and especially risk management before you even think about putting real money on the line.
Sound advice. And maybe one last thing for you to think about. As technology keeps changing, regulations evolve, the global economy shifts, how might Forex trading look for individuals like you in the future? What new tools or strategies might pop up? What new challenges? Definitely something to keep in mind as you explore this world. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed-sponsored jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed-sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.